PayPal donations? Nah, we don't need them. Patreon? What's that? An element on the periodic table? Forget it. We believe in offering true value for your hard-earned cash, and that comes in the form of our new book, Death by Umbrella, The 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons. We visit some of our favorite and most unique kills in this awesome book, which has a foreword by trauma legend Lloyd Kaufman. Be sure to pick up a copy at Amazon.com, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada, and at Bear Manor Media.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait, there's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 102. Brian Usna's 1989 Oddity Society.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to say 89, though, because, I mean, although this film is listed as 1989 on IMDb, it really didn't get a release till 92. Because it was shelved. The studio just didn't know what to do with it, and it was, as you said, it's an oddity.
I think still they would not know what to do with it.
No,
never would they know what to do with this.
Exactly.
It's just almost audience-proof in a way.
Well, when this movie came out, I mean, when it finally did hit cinemas in 92, I mean, it came and went without a trace. But over the years, it's amassed a cult following, and recently put out on Blu-ray by Arrow, who puts out just incredible editions. And Society, this is one of those movies that once you see it, you will never forget it.
For sure. And the premise is just so odd. Well, we'll get into it. This is sort of the anti-Freudian movie. It's got lots of Freudian elements, but by the same token, it's generally speaking, because this is a coming-of-age story involving a teenager. Generally, the teenager is all id, and... Mm-hmm. Society is the superego, or is the trying to keep them in check, and they have this unbridled id and enthusiasm, and impulse control is out the window, and they don't know what they're doing. This weird movie, the opposite is true. The parents and the authority figures are the weirdos, and the kid is the center of morality. And I had not seen this movie, and I was excited to because of Usna's involvement mm-hmm. with some of my favorites, Reanimator.
Well,
so I
love,
had nothing
yeah.
about this. So I was going into this knowing nothing.
I couldn't
so
wait
great.
Until you saw it because, number one, obviously we love Brian Usna because this guy produced Reanimator. He produced From Beyond. He produced Dolls, all these wonderful mm-hmm. Stu Gordon films. And, yeah, he went on to direct Bride of Reanimator and The Dentist and Return of the Living Dead 3, which is amazing. Forget about Return of the Living Dead 2. That was just abysmal, but 1 and 3 are incredible. And Usna is a unique character in horror. And then on the other hand, I knew you would love this because you love body horror. And
yes, and also, again, this is a teenager coming of age movie. I love body horror. I love in-group out-group dynamics mm-hmm. sort of thing. You wrote a piece on Tom Holland's website about Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which I haven't had a chance to read yet, but I've revisited it.
How dare you not read my stuff? Yeah. Oh my god, that's
there's only so much time in the day. I'll get around to it this week. And I wrote my own thing on Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is 78, which is one of my all-time favorite movies, with which this one is occasionally compared, because you have people acting strangely who are not being themselves, and they seem to be replaced by replicants. And this movie has been read in a thousand different ways till Tuesday. And this one, again, this poor kid growing up in Los Angeles suburbia here is surrounded by these just weird figures who are not behaving as they should. Mm. And he's the one who's just forced into this adult role as he has to come to terms with this. So it's going to be hard to delve into the plot of this without spoiling it, but we'll do our best.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, because I mean, we talk a lot about, in horror, about the other. And you know, the other could be read as the evil entity, or it could be read as the person who is somehow, you know, apart from all these crazy shenanigans going on. And in this movie, we have this kid, Bill, played by Billy Warlock. Let me say a little bit about Billy Warlock. I love that name. I mean, what a name.
Wrestling, right out of wrestling.
Well, just if you're going to act in horror movies and your name is Warlock, that's... Yeah. And then the only other Warlock I knew of was Dick Warlock. Dick Warlock is a stuntman who, he's done stunts in so many different movies, but he also played Michael Myers in Halloween 2. Hmm. And so I IMDb'd Billy Warlock, and this Warlock character, I mean, this kid, I knew him, his face looked familiar to me, and it's because I watched Baywatch. We all did. Come on, we all, you know, as shitty as that show was, you know, seeing, you know, Pamela Anderson running down the beach and slow-mo that red little number. Man, I used to tape that show and then slow-mo that even further, slow-mo, you know, like slow-mo to slow-mo, and I just watched it. That's all I did, you know.
We'll just let that one.
We'll let that go. And, but Billy Warlock was on Baywatch. He was also
soaps.
He was on soaps. Didn't really do many movies other than this.
And which is strange because he's sort of channeling an Emilio Estevez kind of Charlie Sheen sort of charm. Kind of a good-looking guy.
He's a good-looking guy. Slick, and I want to say, actor. But he's actually the son of Dick Warlock. So that's what. So that's
how many Warlocks could there be?
But that's actually not their real name. His real name is William Allen Lemming. So he went from being a lemming, some mindless creature that jumps off cliffs.
To a
male witch, a warlock.
That's a step up for sure.
But it's interesting too because, I mean, he is a good looking guy. And if this was, let's say, like some sort of teen movie directed by John Hughes, he would probably be like, you know, the one of the cool kids hanging around with like Andrew McCarthy or James Spader or something.
Sure. And that's what's interesting, because the cool kid dynamic is totally subverted in this thing, because he is sort of vying for, is he vying for student council president?
Yeah, it was a little weird. It was like a debate team, but it seemed like he was running for some sort of office in school.
Yeah, and he's going against Petrie, who is the quintessential stuffed in a locker chess club geek. And so that has been turned around, and the chess club geek, as I guess he's sort of played the social hierarchy game such that all the jocks and the cool kids like the geek. Mm-hmm. And Billy, the basketballer, is the sort of social outcast in this society.
In this affluent neighborhood.
And I got to say before I forget, as a baller, this guy, he couldn't have been more than 5'6", and he dunks a basketball in like the first scene. Come on, man. There's just no way that guy has hops like that. It's just ridiculous. But again, it doesn't matter. It's just that was one of the cool things that I thought. I thought, okay, for sure, the nerd's going to be a nerd, the jock's going to be a jock. Mm-hmm. Not so. Yeah. There's so many things going on here.
Well, another thing this film has going for it is paranoia. You know, a lot of horror films play on that feeling of like something is just not right. And whether it be a horror movie, whether it be Blue Velvet, David Lynch, and that's not a horror movie per se, but I mean, you know, there's horrific elements, but you know, when you peel back, you know, the layers of white picket fence suburbia, in this case not even suburbia, I mean, this is like an affluent neighborhood with really wealthy people, and there's just something that's not right, and he senses it right from the very beginning. We see him talking to a shrink, and he goes, I just don't understand, I'm scared of everybody, I'm scared of everything, and I feel if I scratch the surface, there'll be something terrible underneath. And
I guess the Freudian elements, what we have an actual psychoanalyst here is Dr. Cleveland, and who's the sounding board for Billy and all his problems. And at the beginning, we sort of get a sense of what kind of neuroses Billy is trying to go through, because he's got a sister, Jenny, who's obviously the family favorite, mm-hmm. and a do-gooder, debutante, yeah. cotillion ball type, mm-hmm. Which was another, maybe we'll get into that as well, what this odd subculture of a debutante ball. It's mm-hmm. very odd, but she's off to go to this dance, and he zips her dress up, and there's lots of interesting sexual tension between brother and sister here. Mm-hmm. But he zips her up and sees the back, her back is a strapless, starting to throb
yeah.
with this little bit of weird, like a shifting sort of worm-like skin mm-hmm. on her back, and he gets sort of spooked out right away.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about this movie too, and the horror is really, for most of the movie's running time, there's hints of horror. You know, you have this paranoid Billy. But in a lot of ways, it really felt like sort of like almost like a John Hughes teen movie, like, you know, this almost like Can't Buy Me Love or something. Like,
yeah.
You know, this social outcast who's trying to get in with the cool kids. There's this character by the name of, was it Ted? Yes.
And he's yes, a Ted party. Ferguson. Yeah, Ted he's Ferguson. The guy who everyone is trying to curry favors with. He's mm-hmm. the cool kid.
And he's throwing a party, and Billy's girlfriend at the time wants to secure an invite.
And you'd think he'd be a shoo-in. He's on the basketball team, he's good-looking, mm-hmm. but they can't. They can't get in.
Yeah, and not just that, but he can't get into his sister's own coming-out party. They didn't invite him, you know, to the cotillion. There's sort of a reason for that, which, you know, well, I guess maybe we'll talk a little bit about later, but there's this character, Blanchard. And Blanchard's interesting because he's got a bit of an obsession
with Jenny, Jenny and
the sister.
Reasonably, yeah, rightly so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's a good-looking girl, uh-huh. definitely. Yeah, he records something very surreptitiously on the way to this cotillion ball, this coming-out party. And the things that come out, all of a sudden, are just completely out of left field in the sense.
Yeah, this is like, right out of like Sallow, 120 Days of Sodom, or this kind of thing. There's this sort of free-for-all sexual,
mm-hmm.
what would you call it?
Well, bacchanalia, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
First we dine, then this is the father. This is the father saying, Jim and Nan are the parents of Billy and Jenny, and he's like, you know, first we dine, then copulation. First someone your own age, then your mother and me. So right away we're getting these hints of incest, and he's playing this tape for, Blanche was playing this tape for Billy, and Billy at first is like, what are you doing recording my sister? Fuck you, how dare you do this?
Yeah.
But then when he hears it, he's like, what? You know, he can't deny his own ears.
Yeah, for sure. And earlier on, I guess Blanchard has been spying on his sister. So mm-hmm. He's an odd duck. He hides in the closet. He hides tape recorders everywhere. He's just a weird, paranoid guy. And Billy gets his hand on the recording and marches into Dr. Cleveland's office yep. and attempts to play it for him and goes, listen, I don't look like my family. They are perverts. They are incestuous. They are sexual deviants.
Well, he doesn't say that,
but he plays the tape for him, and the tape is this sort of
completely innocent.
Run-of-the-mill, innocent chat about a coming-out party.
First we dine, then we dance.
Yeah.
And you'll meet some young men, and so on, yeah. And again, I mean, this is interesting, because then we're looking at Billy, and this being your first viewing, you must have thought, well, unreliable narrator.
Yes, know? It's exactly what I thought. That's mm-hmm. really freaky. Yeah, you have some sort of premonition there. But yeah, that's that gets played to the hilt when no one will listen to this guy and his problems. Mm-hmm. And he has no one to turn to. And obviously, as we saw in Nightmare on Elm Street, you have no one to turn to when you're being just inundated with these awful dreams mm-hmm. and your authority figure parents are of no assistance to you, nor are in part two psychiatrists or the healthcare profession. This one, the healthcare profession can't save him either.
Yep.
So what is he to do?
You know, we don't know. Is this real? Are there some paranoid delusions on Billy's part? Is he going to be like the psycho at the end? We don't know. But as the story continues, more and more unsavory things start to happen. I mean, you talked about some sort of elements of incest. There's also the scene where Jenny's taking a shower. And it's very subtle, but if you see that something is not right with her body in that shower.
Yeah, it's twisted like a corkscrew, yeah. and her breasts are sort of on her back, because I guess Brian Usna was influenced by Salvador Dali.
He was,
and so, if not mm-hmm. this movie, And this had those sort of twisted configurations that you would see in Persistence of Memory or one of these off paintings where things are twisted and turned and but not as they seem.
It's bizarre because then he just barks into his sister taking a shower and, you know, they look to be about the same age. She's like, Billy, what are you doing? And he just says, oh, I wanted to grab this.
And sunscreen or whatever. Yeah. And she's covering her breasts and clearly she's normal when the shower door opens. Mm-hmm. But so he's hallucinating. Well, maybe. He's hallucinating the contents of the recording. Mm-hmm. He's hallucinated his sister's physicality in the shower. Everything is going wrong for this guy.
Well, there's one thing that's going right for him, and there's a gorgeous girl by the name of Clarissa.
Uh-huh.
And she takes a liking to Billy. And they end up going back to Clarissa's and
yeah, stooping. I guess, they end up stooping, and...
But this Clarissa, there's something very bizarre about her. First of all, after the act of copulation, Billy sees something, and then he doesn't see it, and Clarissa sort of, he goes like...
Well, I guess he's maybe not the most sexually experienced, because he again sees her twisted form in the act of lovemaking, where her leg is akimbo on this side, and then he's sort of all weirded out by the fact how she can contort after they've hooked up, done the horizontal boogie. Mm-hmm. They're downstairs, her mom barges in. And her mom is an interesting figure in this movie, sort of a divine John Waters kind of character who looks like a drag queen, just like a giant man with just giant tits and big sort of fake hair. And
he has a fixation with hair. I mean,
yes.
At one point, Billy runs into her and she coughs up a hairball.
Yeah.
Very bizarre. But, again, I mean, talking about Clarissa, she's as gorgeous as she is, there's things that she says, like, After sex, she offers Billy some tea and goes, how would you like it? Cream, sugar, would you like me to just pee in it?
Yeah, I didn't know what to make of that.
Indeed, it's amazing. And Clarissa talks about dissatisfaction with her mother. You know, she does things that I don't particularly approve of. Clarissa is part of, quote-unquote, society. And ultimately, you were talking about, you know, society...
We have to conform to it, and we're not used to seeing teens as the voice of reason and morality. So they are trying to, initiate young Billy into what is a kind of cult.
But are they really? I mean, that's the whole thing, right? Yeah. Or are they grooming him for something else?
Yeah.
And that's where the unbelievable climax of this movie comes into play.
Yeah, which we definitely can't spoil.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to talk about society without not spoiling it, but, like, we gotta talk about it. Because the horror comes into play, the real horror comes into play in the last 20 minutes, and all I can say to you is two words. The shunting.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't want to... For those that have never seen Society, we don't want to... describe the shunting in great detail, because it would definitely take away a lot of the thrill of discovery. However, when you want to talk about horror, I mean, you want to talk about seeing things on screen that you've never seen before.
Yeah, for sure.
What the fuck, man? Like, there's just images that when I first saw this movie, amazingly, I'll tell you how I first saw this movie. I was in Thailand. And I was traveling around, with backpacking, and I purchased a little mini DVD player. And, everywhere you go in Thailand, you just buy these bootleg DVDs off the street. And, you know, most of them were, like, first-run releases, and I was buying them because I needed some entertainment some nights. And as I was flipping through, Society, that's a horror flick I really, I want to see. Actually, I think I purchased it in Australia. Yes, now that I think about it, it was a pack, because my player was all region, and it was actually, it was a legitimate copy purchased in Australia. I'm like, I heard a lot about this movie, and Brian Usna, his name was quite familiar to me, and I remember staying in my flea bag room in Thailand one night, and popping into my little mini DVD player, and once we got to the shunting, I was like, my jaw was on the floor. I couldn't believe where this movie went to.
And we can't get into it too much. But even then, you mentioned the piss in the teacup scene. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's no way I saw that coming. There's no way I saw the mom coming. The shower scene I didn't see coming. Nothing in this plot, having known nothing about it, there's absolutely nothing I saw coming in any of this thing. It was just, it was a joy just to see what would happen next. Mm-hmm. And again, there, obviously we divulged a few details here, but there's just so much weird Freudian undertones of stuff. And it, you said how this went in and out of theaters so quickly. How in hell would you promote this thing? How in hell would this be made today? Mm-hmm. How did it get made then? He had a problem finding a director using this, so he did it himself.
Well,
it took years to come to the cinemas.
Actually, he basically used Bride of Reanimator as collateral. They wanted a sequel to Reanimator, and I guess maybe Gordon wasn't interested in directing, so they turned to Usna and he said, I will do Bride of Reanimator as long as you allow me to do Society first. And on my Arrow Blu-ray, I was watching the extra features, and he goes, I really want to do that because a lot of directors, their first movie is both their first and their last. So I knew if I made this really fucked up movie, at least like had Bride of Reanimator or something commercial and something I could then make after that. He had the set pieces in mind, and he basically reverse engineered this movie around the set pieces. So, you know, the shunting, which we're not going to go into great detail all about, that was he was influenced by Dolly, as you mentioned earlier, and he also teamed up with this incredible makeup artist, a Japanese makeup artist, whose name is Screaming Mad George.
Yes.
How incredible is that?
That's great.
And, in fact, in the opening credits, it says, not makeup effects by, but surrealistic makeup effects by Screaming Mad George. You know, this guy, I mean, he's not really well known in terms of, you know, he's people don't think, oh, well, he's a Tom Savini or a Dick Smith or what have you, Stan Winston, but, I mean, he's worked on some stuff. He worked on Predator. He worked on Nightmare on Elm Street 4. But, man, oh man, what they pulled off in the last 20 minutes, and all practical.
Yeah, really, really
cool. I don't know. I don't know how they managed to do it. It was just mind-blowing. In fact, in the IMDb synopsis of this movie, it even says right there in the synopsis, not for the faint of heart. And you wouldn't think that if you just watch the first, you know, hour, you would think, well, this is a sort of like a kind of a teen movie with not really a whole lot of, just undertones of horror, but there's not a lot of horror, but then you get to the end of this movie, and holy shit, man.
True, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
But even the stuff that's really not traditional horror, there's a debate that's going to be held between the top nerd and Billy, and Billy has hallucinated or not, or mm-hmm. maybe he has
about
the death of his opponent in this debate, and he gives this speech in front of hundreds of kids saying, Petrie's dead.
Right, because at one point,
I thought, whoa, this is like a Matthew Broderick in Election, except like through the lens of David Lynch or something.
Indeed.
It's like, what is his mental illness is on display in front of hundreds of people, or is it? So we're not going to spoil it, but he's just giving this meltdown in front of everyone, and I thought, what is going on?
Right, because at one point, I mean, you know, here we have this unreliable narrator, this paranoid figure, and Petrie comes up and goes, I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you about society. Come meet me at this particular place.
Yeah.
And when he goes to meet Petrie, he sees Petrie with his throat slit. Then when he gets to the relevant authorities, Petrie's gone.
His body's disappeared. He's disappeared.
Nonetheless, he's convinced that Petrie's been murdered. he then goes to this debate. He says, you know, he's giving this speech about Petrie. And who should walk in but Petrie? And poor Billy is the laughingstock. And, of course, it's not going to sit well with Billy's psychiatrist. Billy, I didn't want to put you on drugs. Now we're going to have to. Loss of control.
Yeah. How amazing is that?
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much going on in this movie. Brian Usna is his, like, one thing, when you see the words Brian Usna in the credits of a film, whether it's producer, director, you know you're in for something. You're in for a treat. You know,
for things you've never seen.
Indeed. And, you know, as my, I will say, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Bride of Reanimator. There was also another sequel that Usna directed called Beyond Reanimator. But there's still going to be something there, you know? I like the school he came from. You know, the Stuart Gordon, Brian Usna school. I enjoy it. And
for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Society is, it's a film that every horror fan owes themselves to see this movie. Because, mm-hmm. with, you know, even removing yourself from the shunting, there's just a lot of things going on in this movie. A lot of subverting of audience expectations, a lot of sort of narrative kind of going in ways which we don't expect it to. And then, yeah, a denouement, which is just like one for the ages.
Yeah.
So I mean, like I said before, when we decided to podcast Society, I was so excited because I knew you hadn't seen it before and I couldn't wait to see it, And I couldn't wait to hear your thoughts on Society.
Well, I'm so glad I saw it, and I'm going to start with what I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
Forget Sharon Stone. There's a leg-crossing scene in here, which is just terrific, where Billy's on stage, and he essentially hallucinates a woman opening her legs to expose herself to him, and he loses his train of thought before regaining it and giving a rousing sort of election, Matthew Broderick movie-type speech, where he gets the people back on his side. But that was really neat. Also, the psychiatrist was a great character, too, because you don't know what his motivations are or what he's all about. He kind of looked a little bit like Peter Boyle in a way, too. He's sort of a bald guy and a hulking figure who's ostensibly there to help Billy, but who provides no succor, no assistance, nothing whatsoever. And he's just a great character, too. All the people who draw Billy into the little web of this society. And again, this weird sort of anti-Freud, total Freud, Gestalt Freud, I don't know what the hell this thing was. This thing couldn't be made today. There's no way with this kind of subtext and text something this perverse would be made at all. There's just no audience for this because of how horror has been bifurcated into PG-13 versus the harder stuff. This has sort of an in-between. Mm-hmm. It's a tweener.
Yeah.
Sort of like an Invasion of the Body Snatchers type thing, although even more innovative than that. Less sci-fi, but again, so that's what I learned. What did you learn? There's so much to learn. I'm just breaking it down here.
What I learned, of course, is it's not going to make a lot of sense to those that haven't seen the film. But, you know, oftentimes when we're young, we consider our parents to be buttheads. And sometimes your parents can actually be literal buttheads. And that's about all I want to say about that.
For sure. Star rating.
4 stars.
For sure. Yeah, I'd give it maybe 3 3/4 because I'm doing this little fraction kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But anywhere between 4 and 3.5. Well worth your time. Apologies if we've spoiled little elements of it. We've kept the denouement under wraps for everyone who hasn't seen it because that's something really to behold. It's out of this world. It's beyond your any of expectations. It's really nuts and really bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
For more, check out www.reallyawfulmovies.com and follow us on Twitter for sure and send us your suggestions for oddball curiosity in the horror genre or otherwise, awful_movies. And remember to listen to our podcast, part of the Crypt TV family. Every week we have new episodes generally uploaded Friday or Saturday. So check us out. Send us an email, reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com. We'd be thrilled to hear from you and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.